What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Life is full of things to manage. Your work, your family, your plans, and your treatment. Consider Kesimpta, ofatumumab 20 milligram injection. You can take it yourself from the comfort of home. If you're ready for something different, ask your healthcare provider about Kesimpta and check out the details at kesimpta.com. Brought to you by Novartis Pharmaceuticals Corporation.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It's been more than a month since a magnitude 7 earthquake devastated Haiti, killing an estimated 230,000 people. An outpouring of goodwill has been directed toward Haiti's children, the most vulnerable population in an already vulnerable society. Some ill-considered relief efforts have made headlines, but a lot of tough work on the ground is being done to help Haitian kids. And the real need that remains is huge. This hour on Point, focusing on Haiti's children. You can join the conversation. What's your question about how things are going for Haiti's children? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear in a moment from two insiders who've been at the front lines of efforts in Haiti, and we'll even hear from a Tennessee dad who just adopted a Haitian girl and took in her best friend, too. But joining me first from Port-au-Prince is Trenton Daniel, reporter for the Miami Herald. Trenton, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Can you describe for us the situation in Haiti right now, more than a month after the quake?
Well, right now what you're seeing is something of a little bit of normalcy returning to Port-au-Prince and surrounding areas, at least on the surface. You see that businesses and markets have reopened, restaurants have reopened, people are going to church, children are out playing in the street, and that seems to be what's visible the most. Humanitarian relief efforts have gathered steam. It's not uncommon to see trucks from which people are delivering food, such as rice, water as well, and you see tents being distributed as well.
So it sounds, for the most part, like things are moving in a good direction. I read this morning the Associated Press quotes Haiti's President René Préval, who says it will take at least 3 years to clear the rubble left by Haiti's earthquake. He says it will take 1,000 trucks moving rubble for 1,000 days to clear out the capital. To your eye, does that look about right? I mean, is there still massive destruction for as far as the eye can see, and how is that process moving along?
I mean, absolutely. It's, wherever you look in Port-au-Prince and some of the adjacent cities, I mean, there's just, they're flattened buildings and just rubble everywhere. You know, much of the rubble has been cleared from the streets in the past few weeks. And so, you know, obviously people can start getting around the capital. How they're going to transport all this concrete and rubble from the city is still being worked out. I definitely think it's going to take quite some time.
You mentioned that businesses are opening and markets are opening, restaurants to some extent. There is still a desperate need for shelter, though, isn't it? Many homes that survived the quake are empty because nobody's sure they can withstand another quake or another tremor.
Right, absolutely. And what you see is, there are tent cities everywhere in the capital. Pretty much wherever you find a strip of open land, you'll find a little tent city. And, you know, some of them are just a few people, and others are several thousand, maybe as many as 10,000 and up. And, many of them differ in terms of quality. You have some tent cities with really elaborate dome-style tents that have been donated. They have living room quarters, so to speak, as well as sleeping quarters. But then at the same time, you also find a lot of settlements where it's essentially just a collection of sheets. And that's becoming increasingly worrisome for many people with the rainy season around the corner.
That's right. That's right.
Last week there were some heavy showers one morning, and you know, many people got wet, and this is a big concern because you still have people, of course, who are still recovering. You know, they're still injured from the earthquake, and so they fear that their bruises and open wounds could be infected with the water.
Well, Trenton Daniel, I know you've been there for weeks now, and I sure appreciate your perspective. Thank you. Trenton Daniel is a reporter for the Miami Herald, and he joined me from Haiti. Trenton, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Joining me now in the studio is Joya Mukherjee. She's Chief Medical Director at Partners in Health, an international medical charity. She's just back from another stay in Haiti. Joya is an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School and a physician for adult and pediatric infectious disease at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Her organization is sponsoring the Stand With Haiti campaign, and standwithhaiti.org is her website. Joya, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
And joining me from Westport, Connecticut is Rudy Von Bernuth, Vice President for Emergency Response at Save the Children, savethechildren.org. He's been coordinating relief efforts in Haiti. Rudy, thanks to you.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Thank you. Joya, let me begin with you. You're just back from Haiti. You've spent 24 days, I think, of the last 30, is what you told me, in Haiti. This has been your second trip. Can you just briefly give us a sense of what it's like there more than a month after the quake?
Yeah. Thank you, Jane, and thank you to WBUR and On Point for having Haiti still in the press and in the news. In my view, as someone working in Haiti now for 11 years, I would say that this situation is nothing like normalcy. That people are suffering. They're desperate. Our organization, Partners in Health, has been working in Haiti for 25 years. We have a staff of nearly 5,000 Haitians that work both from being medical doctors and nurses to community health workers and organizers. The population of Haiti, every Haitian is profoundly affected, whether they've lost people or not. They are now sheltering 10, 15 people, whether they're in the countryside or the city. As a medical doctor, the needs are enormous. Shelter, food, medical care are still desperately needed.
And I want to get to all of that. Rudy Von Bernuth, tell me about the basic challenges facing the most vulnerable victims of the earthquake, which are the children. What are their challenges right now?
Well, one of the biggest challenges they face, Jane, is trauma. They've been through an absolutely terrifying experience. Their families, if they've survived, are traumatized themselves. They've lost their assets, their homes. Their schools are, by and large, not yet functioning. Their whole world has been turned upside down. And with the extraordinary concentration of devastation in Port-au-Prince, there's no easy way for them to imagine it's going to get better anytime soon.
Any idea how many children have been affected, Rudy?
Based on the population of the city beforehand, certainly I would say 500,000 in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
We are targeting roughly that number of children with our programs. We haven't yet fully reached that total. We've reached about 250,000 children with one or another level of our activities. But on top of the trauma, you then have, up until very recently, there's been an acute lack of food. Mm-hmm. Water has not been easy to come by. Medical care, of course. So you name it. A lot of people are still at risk day by day for the most basic necessities of life.
Here's former President Bill Clinton, the UN special envoy to Haiti, just out of the hospital after a heart problem. But he talked about being worried, deeply worried, about the health of people in Haiti.
We've got too many people living in close quarters with, you know, water building up, with too much risk of waterborne illnesses.
The possibility of real serious disease is very real, is it not, Joya?
Yes, and I think for children, we know that at very baseline in the world's poorest countries, 24th 1,000 children die a day of infections that are preventable. The lion's share of this is diarrheal disease and malaria, and diarrheal disease being waterborne and malaria being worsened by standing water. And on top of that, most of these children that die in normal conditions in the poor world have malnutrition. So as we have spiking malnutrition, and even with some distribution, and I would say it's woefully inadequate, of rice. Rice is not sufficient for a growing child, and we will see increasing rates of kwashiorkor, the type of malnutrition that's caused by low protein, and those children can get very severely ill and die. It's much more difficult to treat. So the actual targeting of children under five is something that we're very, very interested in, with the type of nutrition that's going to save their lives.
Rudy, let me bring you in on this food distribution piece, because I know that there are color-coded ration coupons in Haiti now, specially designated sites set up by the World Food Program and your organization as well, designated just for the children. The food situation, the food security situation was already precarious before the earthquake. How would you describe it now?
Well, even more precarious. We're currently distributing food to approximately 240,000 people in the city of Port-au-Prince and additional numbers of people in Jacmel and Laogan. But as your other guest points out, so far it's been rice. There are a lot of vegetables on the open market for those that have some money. The food basket will be changed in the very near future to include beans and oil as well. And Save the Children is looking at specific interventions for children who are affected by malnutrition. We're working with the UN and organizing the distribution of plumpy nut and other high-value foods that are particularly appropriate for young children who may be threatened with malnutrition or suffering from malnutrition. We're training local people in identifying and treating malnutrition. So it is a huge threat and something that we are trying hard to deal with.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about helping Haiti's children, what they need, what remains to be done. You're just hearing sound of some child orphans in Port-au-Prince a few days ago. Joining me in the studio this hour is Joya Mukherjee, Chief Medical Director at Partners in Health. Her organization is sponsoring the Stand With Haiti campaign at standwithhaiti.org. And from Westport, Connecticut is Rudy von Biermuth, Vice President of Emergency Response at Save the Children, savethechildren.org. We spoke a little bit before the break about food distribution, and I'm curious now about shelter, because shelter is a key problem. What are the conditions under which most children in Haiti are currently living, Rudy?
Most children in Haiti are living in the streets. They may have a tent. They may, as somebody else said a little earlier, have a sheet or some plastic sheeting over their heads. But they're living in conditions which are not sustainable and are going to get much worse as the rainy season comes, and then even worse still as the hurricane season comes. So there is an absolutely urgent need to provide more adequate shelter for a very, very large number of people.
Joya Mukherjee, you're just back from Haiti. You were there within 48 hours of the earthquake. You treated more than 800 patients during your first day there. I mean, what are you seeing? What did you see on your last trip as far as shelter?
The shelter situation is absolutely abysmal. I agree with Rudy that, particularly in Port-au-Prince, in the countryside, children have been taken into families, but under those conditions are really not getting adequate support because families themselves cannot afford to feed their children, no less all the home-hosted displaced people. But in Port-au-Prince, the situation is even more dire. And Partners in Health, for example, is providing medical care in four camps, one of which is over 40,000 people. They're just starting yesterday to put some tarpaulins up. And so these are places that people are getting soaking wet, they're getting sick, and so it is absolutely unconscionable. And babies are being born in these tent cities as well, whose, you know, threat to survival is enormous. So, you know, we really have to get shelter on the top of the list, tents have been extremely, extremely slow to come in.
Here's on that point, Undersecretary General of the United Nations and Emergency Relief Coordinator John Holmes, talking on Sunday, saying that officials are shifting their attention from acquiring tents just to getting tarps for the homeless.
The clear advice of the experts is that, yes, tents are necessary in some places, but the priority should be given to tarpaulins and timber and ropes that people can create more flexible and larger structures with, particularly if they're operating, again, in the ruins of their houses, where you can make something with a tarpaulin that you can't make with a tent.
Rudy von Vermuth from Save the Children, does that sound right to you? I mean, how do you balance the urgency of the rainy season versus long-term rebuilding versus fears of aftershocks and the like? I mean, what's the calculus in giving people shelter in Haiti right now?
Well, I think that John Holmes is absolutely right. I think the tents, we certainly purchased 1,000 tents a couple days after the disaster happened and have brought them in. But I think we recognize now that tents will not be durable. Tents will not stand up when the hurricane season comes, and tents in any case generally have a productive life of no more than about 6 months of active use. So we have to look beyond them. I think we're now providing building kits to which are very simple, a few timbers and some tarpaulin, to families to put up a makeshift shelter, which we hope will be more durable. But there are going to be huge complications in terms of, as you mentioned very early in the program, the clearing of all the rubble from the city,
right,
land title, all those sorts of issues that is going to make long-term rebuilding much more difficult.
So many points to get to here. Let me get a listener on first. From Savannah, Georgia, Robinson is on the line. Thanks for waiting, Robinson. I appreciate your call.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Give me a minute here. I was in Haiti during the earthquake, and I suffered all impact. And 2 hours earlier, I was in the school, where my former school in Haiti, where if that was occurred by 1:30, I could have been probably no longer talking to you right now.
Mm.
And the problem in Haiti, for outside community, and always see different thing, because the government in Haiti, which is the provincial government, the former institution, they create an institution that robbing the future of generation. The Haitian generation over and over again.
So you blame the international community and the government that built these failing structures in the first place.
Exactly, because they're the one, the caretaker. They're the one who watched those people out there who supported them create an institution. You know, they didn't do nothing. After the earthquake, I saw a school collapse, 400 children. Not a single government official show up at the place.
It's a good point, Robinson. I'm going to turn to Joya Mukherjee and have her respond. I mean, what has been the government response in Haiti beyond the international community?
I hear your frustration, Robinson, and spending time in these camps, I certainly can say that frustration is there from many Haitian people. I'm not Haitian, but, I've worked in Haiti a long time. I speak Haitian Creole. The one thing I would say as an American is I also think we have to put some blame on the powerful governments that have really bankrupted Haiti over time. And, this includes the United States, particularly under the previous administration, France, as well as the World Bank and the IMF. I mean, education, medical care, these things are not free. The public sector has been really impoverished by policies, and it makes it harder for them to respond.
Let me get back to the children and specifically medical care in Haiti right now. Rudy, I know that there have been many doctors, including Joya here, and you have overseen many in Haiti who are trying to help these children. The military hospital ship, The Comfort, had a special pediatric unit. I suspect they ran out of beds very quickly. How do you prioritize the cases when so many children are in desperate need, even today?
Well, it's unfortunately the actual practice in the field has been one of triage, and you try to provide medical care as best you can to those who are most in need of it and will most benefit from it. But there have been some extraordinary articles and some extraordinary reports coming out of the physicians faced with these impossible choices that they have to make and mm-hmm. the heart-rending choices, and children subjected to procedures that in a more sophisticated environment, there would be better mm-hmm. options available for them that would be less likely to leave them permanently injured or damaged.
Joya Mukherjee, are private medical evacuations of critically injured Haitian children to the United States, are they ongoing?
We have not had a major problem with that. It's not been our strategy of choice. We have been really trying to reinforce the structures that exist in Haiti. We've done lots of orthopedic and trauma surgery in the sites that Partners in Health operates as with the Ministry of Health as well as the General Hospital, and we're improving the ability to have care. The Comfort has provided a wonderful service. To me, the best use of U.S. Military aid is that. But yes, there have been cases, and we haven't had major problems getting children airlifted.
But the truth of the matter is some are airlifted, but there are so many who need to be, mm-hmm. and many are dying waiting. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the truth of it, is it not?
Yes, it is definitely the truth. And I think our best use of investments would not be in airlifting, but really in strengthening the infrastructure on the ground, which is not that hard. I mean, we can provide surgical care under a tent. We can provide we've had a great outpouring of assistance from universities that have sent teams of surgeons, Harvard, Dartmouth, big name schools that not big players generally in relief efforts who've done a wonderful service to Haiti, and we can continue that for a long time. So I think reinforcing the structures on the ground is so key. Evacuation should be there, but the need is too enormous to think that we'll evacuate all these kids.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now, the story of one child told through her now adoptive father. Mike Wilson is joining us from Nashville, Tennessee. He and his wife took in two young girls from Haiti after the earthquake. Their story was first reported by NBC. According to the Wilsons, Tia, their daughter now, is legally adopted. Her adoption was in process before the quake, and Tia's friend Nikia is there on humanitarian parole with the Wilsons. Nice to have you, Mike Wilson. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks. Hi, Jane.
So tell us the story of this process of adopting your 5-year-old daughter, Tia. You were in that process before the quake hit, and then you heard about the quake. What did you do? What happened?
Well, we've been in that process for quite a while. We're part of a ministry, and we go to Haiti. We'll be in and out of the country 11 times this year. And so we had started that process months before, about 16 months beforehand. And so when we heard about the earthquake, we were actually sitting at our conference table having a meeting discussing our upcoming trips and some things that we were going to do differently. And immediately we tried to get in contact with the country of Haiti, any number that we had. And we had just a multitude of phone numbers, and we had friends there, family there. We actually have a 21-year-old that is like our daughter that was had just started an internship at an orphanage in Kafue, Haiti. And mm-hmm. so we were trying desperately to reach her and to find out about the other girls and the other kids that we knew. So we went into overdrive trying to get in touch with them.
And ultimately, you actually made your way to Port-au-Prince. And when you got to the orphanage where your soon-to-be adoptive daughter was, what did you see?
It was complete devastation. When we've been through Port-au-Prince so many times, and we've my wife and I actually at the beginning of January were in Haiti, and we made the comment to each other that this is the best we'd ever seen Haiti look. There were businesses, there were things on the side of the street, of people just really having some sort of way to get through the day and to survive, and little shops and stands. And when I arrived there the next week, the day after the earthquake, and drove through the streets, it was completely different. I mean, cars crushed on the side of the road. Everything that you've seen on TV is very real, but there's no way to describe the reality of it just by a screen.
So you got into that orphanage, and you find this little girl, this 5-year-old girl that you've been waiting to adopt. Her response to seeing you, and then you leaving with her.
Yes, she was extremely excited to see us. Their orphanage was severely damaged, and they were actually sleeping in a vacant lot across the street. And so we got to them and got the children and moved them to a safe house. And I grabbed Tia and did not let her out of my sight for the remainder of the time I was there.
The story continues because you took her back to Tennessee, but her best friend and this little 6-year-old girl with whom she'd spent most of her life in this orphanage was, shall we say, devastated to see this little...
Naika is her name, and Naika was still there, and I had to actually leave her. And my wife had started the process a few weeks earlier, trying to work to get Naika out as well through the adoption channels. We knew they weren't going to happen at the same time, but we had been referred to her. We were going to be her parents, and so that made it much more difficult for her to know that I was leaving with Tia, her best friend and soon-to-be sister, and with the uncertainty of when I would ever come back.
Well, and you did go back.
Yes.
And you brought those two little girls home with you. They are living with you now in Tennessee, along with your three biological children. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much for your story. Good luck to you and especially those sweet little girls.
Thank you so much for helping us get the story out, and let's get help to Haiti as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike Wilson, joining us from Nashville, Tennessee. Would you speak to this story, Joya?
It's a wonderful story, Jane, and I really thank the Wilsons not only for caring about Haiti so much and adopting these two girls, but also through going through the proper channels. Because, you know, no one thinks that children who need homes shouldn't be adopted. But Haiti does have a system of legal structures. It's been weakened severely because of the earthquake. But it's important to the self-determination of the Haitian people that we respect the laws in Haiti. And, you know, there's been a lot of press about that, but child protection remains a major issue because of the lack of respect for Haiti's institutions, and I'm really impressed by that story.
Well, we all remember the story of the missionaries from Idaho accused of taking those Haitian children across the border, and I know many say it was a dangerous distraction for a country still in the throes of that huge humanitarian crisis. Rudy von Bernuth, the truth of the matter is that there are so many children that need homes, so many children that need help. Save the Children, your organization has actually called for a moratorium on any new adoptions of children affected by the earthquake. Why?
Well, we have. We've actually been asked by UNICEF to lead an effort on behalf of the international community for family tracing and reunification. And I agree entirely with the point that Joya made. When we need to ensure that we go through the proper processes and that we're really sure of the status of children before adoption is considered as an option. After the tsunami, more than 97% of the children that we worked with there who were initially identified as being unaccompanied were reunited with family members in the end. So that left a residue of only 3% that were truly orphans with no family support.
Very interesting. So the instinct to swoop in and rescue children may be a natural impulse, but it's not always the best solution, Joya.
And it will add to the trauma suffered by families. And I'll tell you one small story. My colleague Louise Ivers was the only doctor in the UN mission site that was taking care of patients. She herself was evacuated to the UN base. There was a little girl that she cared for who was about 9 years old, was unable to really tell her story because she had head trauma. And after I had been there about 5 days, I was walking through this makeshift hospital, and I saw a man sitting at the foot of her bed and weeping and weeping. And I started speaking with him, and it was his daughter, and he had looked at every morgue. He had looked in every hospital, and he was so delighted to be reunited with his daughter. Imagine this man's trauma, having already lost family, lost his home, to at least be able to hold on to what he still had. And the idea that, you know, international people can provide a better life for Haiti, I mean, I think we have to really be circumspect. And I agree with Rudy 100%. Reunification and support of the families, you know, because these families may be reunified under a sheet, and we have to try to support them too.
Rudy, would you comment on that?
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. I think one of the things that's most amazing is the concentration of the damage and the destruction here. After the earthquake a couple of years ago in China, about one out of every 600 people that were affected actually died. In the case of Haiti, one out of every 10 persons in the city has died, and one out of every 10 persons or more is injured. That's just an extraordinary concentration, and it's going to take a very long time and a lot of support to rebuild these lives.
And so how would you describe this aid operation, the one you're involved in right now in Haiti, Rudy? How would you compare it with other efforts? You mentioned the Asian tsunami and others.
Because the damage was so concentrated and so vast at the beginning, it was difficult for it to gear up because so many of the people who normally would have helped to gear it up, your national staff, et cetera, were victims as well as aid givers. However, at this point, in terms of the initial kinds of assistance, you want to get water, some sort of shelter, food, immediate health care for those that need it. I think the operation is going very well. I think what the problem is going to be now is the transition to a more durable and sustained commitment to rebuilding Haiti and rebuilding it in a way that is better than it was before the earthquake. That has to be our commitment, and we have yet to see whether or not we'll be able to stay the course.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about helping Haiti's children, what they need, what remains to be done. Joining me in the studio this hour is Joya Mukherjee, Chief Medical Director at Partners in Health. Her organization is sponsoring the Stand With Haiti campaign. That's standwithhaiti.org. And from Westport, Connecticut is Rudy Vandernuth, Vice President for Emergency Response at Save the Children. That's savethechildren.org. Let's get some callers in here, some of our listeners. First to Eastham, Massachusetts. Jean-Michel is on the line. Welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yes, I am very grateful to what everybody else is doing in Haiti. But one problem is the Haitian government seems to be not in place in order to fix the situation, and the international community seems not to understand that in order to solve the problem of any country, it has to be done with the people of the country. It seems that the Haitian, most of the Haitian in the diaspora do not understand that we, Haitian, we have a responsibility.
You have the responsibility to put your country back in into shape. I appreciate your call, Jean-Michel. Thank you. How important, Joya, is it to put Haitians at the center of their own development, recognizing that crucial role of helping to get their country back together again?
It's absolutely important for both historic reasons and future reasons, as well as in the present. And I think one of the things we need to do as an international community is look very carefully at how aid is distributed. We know that in United States aid going to Haiti right now, less than a penny on every dollar is going to the government of Haiti. I agree with Jean-Michel that the way that this will have a long-term sustained root in Haiti is to try to empower the government to do this. I also think for historic reasons, we have to respect the will of the Haitian people. This is a democratically elected government. You know, some people like this government, some people don't, but it really doesn't matter. This is the will of the Haitian people, and we need to support that and not sort of do an end run around the government. Our group, Partners in Health, has always accompanied the Haitian government. We do that in multiple ways. We support the public sector by building institutions. We accompany the government to try to assure systems and transparency in accounting. We'd like to continue to do that with other partners, but not run around the Haitian government in the response.
To Fort Myers, Florida now. Jenny is on the line. Jenny, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My concern is that I hear that they say that they barely have any food. You know, all the kids are eating is rice and there's malnutrition. They don't have clean water to drink. But yet Red Cross and other organizations have made billions of dollars. So where is all this money going to? Why are they suffering so much if all these organizations made so much money?
I'm told my producers tell me that, Jenny, your granddad is in Haiti. You've heard nothing from him?
Yeah, he's been over there, and we haven't been able to contact him. We haven't heard anything. So, like, my family were worried, and I'm hearing there's no food over there, but yet all these organizations make much money. Mm. So where is all the money going to?
Well, I hope you make contact, and good luck to you, Jenny. Thanks so much for calling. Rudy, there's a question. With all the money that's gone to Haiti, how come there's still so much suffering, Jenny wonders?
Well, the challenges that we face are not just financing the assistance, but also setting up the infrastructure. When you've got roads that are blocked, when you have buildings and warehouses that have fallen down, when you didn't have large supplies of food in the country beforehand, unfortunately, it does take time to gear all these systems up. As I mentioned before, I think they have been geared up now. Save the Children alone has delivered food over the last 10 days to 248,000 people, and I know that's just a small part of the effort of other organizations working with the World Food Program. So I think the situation is getting better. I hope that Jenny's family member down there, when she gets in touch with them, will have received food. A lot of people are. On the other hand, when you get as much money as has been received, it does create a very important responsibility to spend that money well, and to spend that money in a way that contributes to the long-term recovery of the country. Mm-hmm. Working, as Joya has said, with the government and with local institutions and the local population,
well,
building back better.
Because we're largely focusing on children this hour, Joya, let me ask you about education in Haiti and the schools. So many children out of school now, not many schools to begin with, really, in Haiti. Where do you see that situation going?
Yeah, as we all know, that education is a critical aspect of child health overall and the well-being of children. The schools in Port-au-Prince, so many of them were destroyed. So many children lost their lives in school, and those who didn't, as Rudy mentioned, are very traumatized. I had a five-year-old kid say to me when I asked him, "Are you in school?" He says, "Je ne peux pas mourir." I don't want to die. He associates school with death because that's what he saw. We need a bigger movement for public education in Haiti. Right now, kids in general in Haiti have to pay for school. That's by and large the fact. We need to use this crisis to change that. We cannot commodify education for children. We need massive rebuilding of schools in the countryside, which is where a lot of kids are going now, as well as in Port-au-Prince.
So if you had to pay for education before the quake, what level of education would many of the, you know, 1.5 million children have gotten before the quake? And is there a plan in the next year or two for the children without schools?
Yeah. Not that I know of. I haven't been part of a lot of these discussions, and I'm sure there are plans underway. Right now in the countryside, where we're very familiar, schools are reopening, but they're flooded with children needing to be placed in school now who have no money to pay those fees. They need more books, more benches, etc., teachers. So the plan really needs to be a massive restructuring of how education access can be dealt with. Many of the children in Port-au-Prince do not have access to school. This is why the educational statistics in Haiti are the worst in the hemisphere.
Rudy Vandermuth, speak about the education, this large-scale shift or the restructuring that Joya speaks of that sounds like it will be a necessity now in Haiti.
I think we have a two-stage problem. In the short term, we need to provide temporary educational facilities, and we need to give kids the confidence that they can actually go to them. Mm-hmm. Save the Children is setting up 50 temporary schools in the next few weeks and has already set up safe play, child-friendly spaces for younger children to go and get a modicum of education in. But these are temporary measures, and the international community must work with the government to think long-term about how do you reestablish a school system that was never adequate for its population and turn it into something better than what existed before.
More calls now from Naples, Florida. Sarah is on the line. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how you guys doing? I want to thank you very much for everything you guys have done for us. But I just got one suggestion about Haiti. Every people, every government after Duvalier is like, I'm sorry to say that, is like a thief. They're just going to take all the money, and by huge mention all over the place. They're not going to do nothing for Haiti. So, it's the way it used to be. They're not going to do nothing. About the children, you see the missionary, I'm sorry, but they do a good job to take the kids. Because you know what? Before the earthquake, those kids was in the street. Nobody don't care.
Sarah, thank you. Thank you very much. Joya, there's a caller concerned about government and perhaps some level of corruption, I'm sure.
Corruption happens everywhere, and I think what we learned, at least what I think we learned from the crisis on Wall Street, is that corruption is not something that only happens in the public sector, nor does it only happen in poor countries. And so the best thing we can do is assure systems of transparency, and I think we all need to be, but, you know, to get the reach that's needed, the government must be involved. And so government with accompaniment and systems and transparency and accounting, support from the international community, in my view, is key. We have to assume that corruption will happen in any sector, anywhere in the world, and that our job is to create systems that will minimize and guard against that.
And Rudy Vandermuth, you know, it's not that Haiti's president has been terribly visible throughout this. I mean, there are some reports he hasn't really been speaking to his people even very much. So this is a government that's terribly paralyzed, is it not?
Well, it is a government that's very paralyzed. It's a government whose own buildings have fallen down, many of whose staff have died, most of the rest of whose staff are dealing with losses in their broader family. So, and it's a government that was never very robust. I mean, this is a country which has been in trouble for 200 years, and recent years, occasionally it's gotten a little better, but not a lot better. So there's a lot of work to be done. But I agree with Joya that transparency is very important. After the tsunami, we learned a lot in Aceh and the other countries affected by the tsunami about how you can work with international organizations that are coming into a situation like this to make them more aware of local pressures and local circumstances and more able to deal with it, and therefore to work with local institutions in a way that provides better custodianship for the money that comes in.
Let's welcome Scott to the program. He's calling from Beaufort, South Carolina. Hi, Scott. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jay. How are you today?
Hi. Fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
I've worked in Asia, Thailand, Philippines, Bangladesh, places like that, and I have Western Union money directly to individuals in that area, and the dollar is very strong. I'm a single father. I've got a six-year-old son, and I was sitting here listening to the program, and I'm thinking about the logistics and the reality of me being able to maybe get involved with attempting to adopt a child, and I had the thought of, you know, is there a organization set up to where I could contact somebody directly and just directly wire money to somebody that isn't going to go through an aid group or something like that to try and maybe help shore things up from the bottom?
Well, thanks. Thanks for your thought and the generosity, Scott. Rudy Vandernooth, Vice President for Save the Children, that's an excellent question for you.
Well, I think there are a lot of very credible organizations that are providing support. I am not aware of a way in which one could wire money to an individual in Haiti who needs it if you didn't know that individual beforehand. I think that it would be better to trust that on a long list of reputable organizations that are working there, to trust the one you're most familiar with and most comfortable with, and assume that they, if they've worked there before, will know how to get your money to people that need it in the most effective way.
Hmm. Joya Mukherjee, let me ask you about another issue related to children, and that is vaccinations. I mean, you're an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School, Brigham and Women's Hospital, practicing physician there. You've been to Haiti. You've seen the need. What is, from a vaccination perspective and the prevention of epidemic diseases, what do you see right now the need and moving forward?
Again, the structural issues of safe water as well as sufficient food, because certainly both of those will inhibit the spread of epidemic diseases. But we desperately need a massive vaccination campaign. Many NGOs now are working with the government to make that happen. But again, there are camps of internally displaced people with 75,000, 100,000 people living in them. A third of them are children. And the vaccination rates in Haiti were extremely poor to begin with. So things we worry particularly much about are measles in this setting, where malnutrition is a huge issue. And so we really need to focus on vaccination. But what I would say is vaccination cannot happen well, in my opinion and in the opinion of Partners in Health, without some other medical care being provided. So in the community, we're providing care, one of the communities of 40,000. They were not interested in a vaccination campaign until we brought health care there. They said, look, we're dying now. Prevention is not our top priority. So these efforts to give food, water, medical care, then I think can increase the interest and the ability of people to use vaccination prevention strategies.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee now. Marjorie is on the line. Marjorie, thanks for calling and waiting. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just want to say a big thank you to the international community for all the aid that they give into Haiti. However, I have family members who survived the earthquake, who live in Delmar 33 and Tabar. They have not seen anybody from the UN or from the Red Cross for any kind of help at all. So I was wondering, all this aid that we're receiving, who's managing? Who's helping those people out, the people that are survived the earthquake?
Marjorie, thank you. Rudy, Save the Children, what's the answer?
Well, I think today there's actually a good deal of coordination both among the international community and between the international community and local partners, both government and non-governmental. Like Partners in Health, Save the Children also works with local community groups and local institutions and hospitals wherever we're working. And the UN is running a system wherein they have basically a health cluster, an education cluster, or a water and sanitation cluster, which is attempting to identify gaps and attempting to identify organizations that can move in and fill those gaps on a very regular basis with So efforts are being made. It's certain that some people have not yet been reached. A great many have, and I think that those that haven't been reached should be reached shortly.
In our final moments here, I'm curious what you would both like people to know about the situation in Haiti, and specifically what we're trying to focus on this hour, and that is the children of Haiti. Joya, you've been there twice. I know you've seen hundreds, thousands of children in need. What do you want people to know?
I want people to know that this is a dire life and death situation that is happening right now in Haiti, that kids need shelter, they need food, and they need medical care, and they need to, as quickly as possible, go back to school. And we shouldn't rest until this happens. This is a massive humanitarian crisis. It is not nearly over. It is getting worse, even with us bringing in support. It's getting worse because of the duration now that people are living unsheltered.
Rudy Vandermuth from Save the Children, what do you want people to know?
I guess I would like to convey to people the extraordinary optimism that you see in the children in spite of everything that's happened to them. These are wonderful kids, and they still have hopes for the future, and I hope we won't let them down.
Well, I'd like to thank my guests for a very a great hour, heartbreaking in many ways, but thank you very much. Rudy Vandermuth is vice president at Save the Children. You can see more about their work at savethechildren.org. Rudy, thank you so much for your work on behalf of those children, and we appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Jane.
Joya Mukherjee is the chief medical director at Partners in Health. You can see her organization's campaign at standwithhaiti.org. Joya, thank you very much for your work and your help today.
Thank you, Jane.
You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.